Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It was a busy week. Giants, free agency, a lot of moves made, and what implications, if any, does free agency have for the draft under John Harbaugh? To talk about it, we bring in Dan Duggan from The Athletic, covers the Giants. Hey, Dan, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, good to be back. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. If I asked you to describe the overall approach to free agency, like the strategy that you saw out of the first week of free agency from this new John Harbaugh regime, how would you describe it?
That's a good question. I would say overall, now that like a week into it, I'd say measured. Like there hasn't been any crazy contract that like, whoa, they gave who what? You know, like they haven't overextended, and I mean, there's no contract you look at that, you know, sticks like a Kenny Galladay type albatross. Like nothing they've invested in here is really going to come back to haunt them because they haven't made any crazy overpays. And then my first impression, you know, if you ask me this 24 hours, 48 hours in a free agency, was clearly the shift offensively. Like they're like the term I use, they're like supersizing things. You know, you went from having, you know, Wandale Robinson, probably the smallest slot receiver in the league, and you basically are allocating his, you know, his money, his snaps, his targets to a guy like Isaiah Likely, who obviously is a tight end, but is basically going to be, you know, your big slot receiver. And then you go out and make Patrick Ricard the highest paid fullback in the league. You bring a 300-pound, you know, technically skill position guy to your offense. Clearly, you're changing the identity of things. It's not going to be, you know, sort of a finesse 11-personnel offense. They're going to, you know, try to build this smash-mouth mentality, which fits with, you know, it's not a surprise with Harbaugh's DNA that Ricard was the easiest free agent to project to the Giants at the moment Harbaugh got hired. But you just those two pieces to me and kind of veering away from, you know, they weren't going to spend $70 million on Wandale Robinson, clearly shows sort of a changing in how they're going to structure this offense.
Yeah, you know what? You mentioned Patrick Ricard, and one of the things I was struck by was his press conference where he talked about if John Harbaugh were coaching Pop Warner, sign him up, like, you know, he'd be there. So I just was wondering, you've now covered a number of Giants head coaches, and while there may have been affection for Brian Daboll, but in terms of what you're hearing from players about John Harbaugh, what is there a real Harbaugh effect in terms of players wanting to come here, whether they've worked for him before or not?
Yeah, well, it's funny because Daboll might not be the best example because half the Giants seem like they followed him down to Nashville. I think a lot of these cases, whoever offers the most money becomes the most appealing, you know, but I definitely think Harbaugh, I forget even the guys who came from Baltimore, even just guys like Greg Newsome, who, you know, went against him in the AFC North, or whoever it is knows who John Harbaugh is. You know what I mean? No one's like been in the league for a couple of years. It's like, oh, who's the new Giants coach? Like, everyone knows him. His reputation, his track record speaks for itself. So certainly the Ravens guys, you know, Ricard, again, that's why you knew he was such an obvious guy to follow. He had been 9 years. Harbaugh basically, you know, found him, molded him, gave him this role, and obviously it's worked out great for both of them. A guy like Isaiah Likely, honestly, was sort of the biggest surprise because you heard whispers like maybe, you know, he didn't love his time in Baltimore, and you try and kind of play the connections game there because obviously his role was sort of always reduced. He's kind of second fiddle to Mark Andrews. Clearly any ill will wasn't towards Harbaugh because he came and followed him here, so maybe it was Todd Monk in the OC, maybe it was the front office for, you know, prioritizing Andrews over him. You never really know that from the outside. And then again, maybe it's just money talks. Like, hey, whatever friction I had with John in Baltimore, $40 million can make that go real quick. But no, I mean, I absolutely think, you know, it's been from day one with him when he came in here. You know, it just has that sort of clout that none of these guys, I came in right after Coughlin. So McAdoo, Shermer, Judge, Daboll, none of them arrived with anywhere near the level of just sort of stature that Harbaugh carries. And again, players feel it too. You hear them all saying the right things, but like whether you play with them or it's your first time. Like, I know it's going to be hard. He's going to make us work hard. That's what I want. You know, we'll see if they still feel that way. And, you know, mid-August, you know, if training camp's appreciably more grueling than it has been in the past. But again, I think they're all going to buy in because he has the resume that no one can dispute.
You mentioned they've obviously signed, you know, so whether it's having a converted receiving tight end now is going to be a big slot. They're getting bigger there. Patrick Ricard, a 300-pound, you know, moving fullback that's almost like another offensive lineman on your team, mobile offensive lineman. And so clearly for Giants fans who are big fans of ground and pound, we're going to see some of that. On the other hand, a couple of recent moves that they made in the last few days, they signed Calvin Austin from Calvin Austin III. They signed a wide receiver from the Steelers. They signed Darnell Mooney, wide receiver from the Falcons. And these are different guys. And so in terms of, you know, how do you see that working? And what does that say about, from a usage standpoint, a personnel standpoint, that it's not all just going to be tight ends and fullbacks?
Right. Yeah. I mean, even if you're the team that uses those personnel groupings the most in the league, it's not going to be much more than 50%. You're still going to be in 11 personnel around 50%. And that's, again, on the low end of things. So you still need three wide receivers. I mean, just think about just game situations, 2-minute drills, end of half, end of game, you're playing catch up. You need three quality wide receivers in this league and obviously more, hopefully. And you look at just the Giants wide receiver core and you take Wandale Robinson out, you know, basically, I think he just had just shy of 100 catches, obviously over 1,000 yards. You got to fill that somehow. And obviously, likely, I think, is a guy who, you know, on first down, second down, whatever, he's a guy who can fill in that role. But you still just need legitimate NFL wide receivers who can be cornerbacks down the field. And you looked at it, you got Malik Nabers, who, you know, he's rehabbing, you know, major knee injury, you know, all internal work from the Giants that they hopefully be back for the start of camp. I'm not even sure why they're putting that ambitious of a timeline on it. Just tell me if you're ready for week one, and I'd be happy at this stage of the game. And then Darius Slayton, who, you know, is 1 year into, he finally got paid, is 1 year into this $36 million contract. Majorly disappointing season. Like, I don't think he's done as an NFL player, but it's also a little hard to rely on him based on what you saw last year where really didn't produce. The drops that kind of always plagued him really became magnified. So you have to go and get some guys in there. And obviously, as you mentioned, Austin and Mooney are those two guys for now. Very cheap, you know, it seems like very low risk, potentially high reward. I think with Austin, he kind of profiles more as the Wandale Robinson replacement. I don't think he's going to have 95 catches for 1,000 yards, but he's a small, shifty guy. He's going to primarily play in the slot. So you're in three wide receiver sets. I think he's your slot receiver. You know, you can mix and match. You can move Nabers inside, but I think he's the guy primarily. When I look at Mooney, and now again, we don't even know the full financial terms there. It's up to $10 million, and that those up two words can do a lot of work at free
agency. It could be $4 million up to $10 million.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't know what that is.
Right. But nonetheless, even $10 million, that's a modest investment.
Yeah.
But I do look at it, you're kind of stuck with Slayton's contract. Again, whatever you think about as a player, again, I don't think he's as bad as he was last year. But even if you wanted to move from there'd be no benefit, but that doesn't mean he has to play 75% of the snaps. So that's where I think Mooney comes in. You let those guys duke it out. And again, it doesn't have to be one guy plays 100% of the snaps, one guy plays zero, but maybe it's a little more of a timeshare for that other outside wide receiver spot opposite Nabers. And maybe it isn't just obviously handed to Slayton. You got a guy with a $16 million cap hit. You kind of assume we're penciling him into the starting lineup. You bring Mooney in. I think that probably tells you, I don't know if Harbaugh and Nagy and the new staff are quite as enamored with what they've seen. So I think it's sort of, you know, obviously it's good to have depth. You got to let guys battle it out. And I think it's like Slayton and that Mooney signing to me. If I'm Slayton, I'm saying, okay, I better really come back, you know, ready to play because they're not handing me anything. Whereas Austin, you needed to just get a slot guy. You know, he's probably more going to compete with, you know, Gunnar Olszewski and for the return job and everything like that. But yeah, I think Mooney is a direct reflection of like, they're not counting on Darius Slayton and they can't get rid of him. And he's a good guy. And so if he's your fourth wide receiver, he's your fourth wide receiver. But they weren't content with just rolling with him as wide receiver too.
One of my listeners, followers, had wanted me to ask you, with the signing now filling up that wide receiver room, do you think this takes a first-round draft pick, number 5 overall wide receiver out of play, someone like a Carnell Tate?
I don't think anything they've done in free agency like takes anything off the board in the draft. I mean, I do think, you know, the whole like, best player available thing is how every team says they want to operate. And then you kind of find out, well, you know, obviously they tend to fill needs as well. But I think if you just kind of look at the way free agency is shaped up, there isn't like one glaring hole. So like if they went in without adding any wide receivers, just say, oh, that seems like it's maybe pointing towards drafting one of five. But I think the problem with the whole idea of taking wide receiver at five, I don't know if they'll be the best player available. So then you're really forcing a need. So I think something Shane says every offseason, he wants to go into the draft as if you could play a game that Sunday. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to, you know, obviously you want to supplement and upgrade in the draft, but you don't want to have, we need this position to be filled over the next 3 days. And so I think you look at their wide receiver core, it's not a great wide receiver core, especially with Neighbors uncertainty, but you can go play an NFL game with Darius Slayton, Malik Neighbors, Austin, and Darnell Mooney. So they're not pressed into taking one of those guys. And I have a hard time seeing any of those wide receivers standing out when they're on the clock as the unquestioned best player available. And so with that in mind, I think there's probably other directions they will go. Cause this isn't a draft where it's like, you have a Malik Neighbors at the top of the draft where it's like, that guy was, you know, he was a sixth pick, but he was unquestioned one of the top prospects in that class. I don't know that these receivers are looked at in that same light.
Talking to Dan Duggan from The Athletic. Dan, if I said to you, what was your favorite move that the Giants made over this last week in free agency, what was the best move they made?
Oh, that's a good one. The best move they made in free agency. I guess I don't want to be like greedy, but I guess it's Mooney though. Cause I mean, he is a guy who has, you know, produced at the NFL level. And again, we don't know the exact terms, but if it's up to $10 million, that means that, you know, the true value is probably going to, like you said, somewhere around
five million, six million, something like that.
Yeah. So I like taking a swing like that on a guy who has produced. I mean, his last, or maybe his only 1,000 yard season was with Nagy in Chicago. So, and I know
I think he came like maybe a yard short of that or something like that in 2024. But like virtually, like in other words, whether it was one in Chicago and almost one with Atlanta, he is a guy who's had a couple of basically 1,000 yard seasons. And, So he and Nagy, is that somebody you feel like that's probably Nagy's role in recruiting?
It seems like it, yeah. And then the fact that, you know, you're reuniting him with an offensive coordinator who obviously has a pass with him and likes him. But as we're talking here, sometimes you get a prisoner of the moment, like I said, and I'm thinking of guys they signed from outside. I got to backtrack. The best signing by far to me was Jermaine Illuminor. Because, I mean, if they didn't sign him, that discussion we just had about, you know, would they take a wide receiver at five, we'd be saying they have to take a tackle at five. Like, if they did not re-sign Jermaine Illuminor, they would have probably put themselves in a corner because the rest of the tackle market, you know, was not very good this offseason free agency. Guys really didn't even get paid. It was just not a very strong market. And his was a really tricky market to nail down. Like, you know, I did a big story on him leading into free agency. And I mean, I think he had higher aspirations than $13 million. You talk to people around the league, it was kind of a wide range, but even on that, 13 was on the low end. Because you're a quality pass protecting tackle in the NFL, you would think you're going to get more than what he got. So for them to get him at $13 million a year, to me, that's a steal. I mean, if he plays the way he has the last couple of years, that's an absolute steal. And again, that position was just so vital because it's not like, if you didn't get Tremaine Edmonds, let's say, there were plenty middle linebackers on the market you could have plugged in. There really wasn't a guy you would have felt comfortable plugging in at right tackle if Illuminor went somewhere else. And so then again, to get him at what I view as a discounted price, obviously the league disagrees because the market wasn't as strong as I expected. I still think that's a bargain. And I think that's such a vitally important spot. And he's held it down really well the last 2 years. So that, yeah, forget Mooney. That was recently biased. Definitely, you know, Illuminor, I feel like that was a million years ago. That was only a week ago. But that to me was like a home run re-signing. So, you know, it's always good to keep your own guys. And obviously not a homegrown guy, but has been here, has been a good part of the program for the last 2 years. So getting him at that rate to me was the best move of the free agency by far.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You mentioned they would have had a huge hole at right tackle. They do have a huge hole right now at right guard. And
yeah,
do you expect, what do you think is going on right now? You know, as we sit here talking right now, unless they want to go with, you know, converting Marcus Bowe to a guard or something like this, there really is no right guard on the roster right now. I do not consider Evan Neal that. So I don't think too many Giants fans would. So for a viable plan at right guard, what do you expect to happen?
I was going to say, you're forgetting someone there. I mean, they made them talk about a big re-signing there. That was the most shocking move of all of free agency to me was Evan Neal coming back. They had 27 free agents. I do a thing I predict coming or going. I called him the easiest one to forecast. He was 100% going. So, but yeah, nonetheless, I do not think they're penciling him in as a starter at right guard.
No.
Yeah, and that's very interesting. I got to probably do some reporting because it's one of these things where free agency happens so fast and furious. Then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second. Like, yeah, they still haven't filled that, you know, because you think it's going to happen right away. And then sometimes a position will kind of languish like that.
But do you think it is? There are still, you know, I mean, there's a number of names that are still out there. We have all heard about Wyatt Teller from the Browns. There's, you know, Kevin Zeitler, former Giant. Obviously, there's Greg Van Roten from the Giants and running it back. But what do you see in terms of, you know, Joel Bitonio, you know, whatever? There are names that are out there, guys who are older. And how do you see? And then there is the draft, and whether that's the first or second round or something like that, going with somebody. But how do you see the Giants approaching guard and shoring up this offensive line?
Right, yeah, and I don't think it's a position they're going to go into the draft with that same gaping hole, and again, having like Marcus Bowe or Aaron Stinney penciling as a starting right guard. I don't think we'll see that, but to your point, you mentioned about a handful of guys who have proven, you know, they can play the position at varying levels of success, but all veterans, and you could plug in there and feel comfortable with. They'll sign one of them. I'm very confident in that. Which one? That's to be determined, because it has been interesting, because if you go back to last week, it was late night. It might have been the first night of free agency, even. They were like, in on Elijah Vera Tucker, and then he got a really strong deal from the Patriots. So I don't think, you know, anyone really saw it coming, or I think, you know, I'm sure the Giants wanted him, but there was a point where it's like, we can't pay this much money for a guy who's never on the field. But so you just said, okay, they'll pivot to the next guy. And then all of a sudden, you know, my colleague Ian O'Connor reported, like, now they're kind of pivoting towards like these low cost signings, like Austin, like Mooney. I mean, you're not probably going to get a quality guard, the names you said, maybe other than Van Roten, for these same rights, though. You're not going to get him for $3 million. Like Kevin Zeitler, I think, made $9 million last year. Like, Wyatt Teller's not coming here for $2 million. I don't think. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Now it feels a little bit like a game of chicken where, you know, I'm sure those guys all saw what Tucker got and like, wait, you got that coming off these injuries? I'm not taking $7 million. I'm taking $10 million. And so maybe there's a little bit of that, just a stalemate. And I think what happens usually to break these types of ties or stalemates is someone goes off the board. And now it's like, okay, well, shoot. We can't just keep playing this game of chicken because the musical chairs are going to fill up here. So I think my impression is to them, and I could, you know, maybe he doesn't feel the same way but himself, Van Roten feels like the backup plan. He was last year. They wanted Will Fries. They got outbid. He went to Minnesota. Boom. The next day they brought Van Roten back. The fact they haven't brought Van Roten back yet tells me they're still in on a guy like Teller. Like, he's been the name that's been out there quite a bit. So I think maybe it's just a matter of if he's still trying to wait out his market. Again, it's such a game of chicken, especially when you get into the second wave of free agency. You don't see a lot of big contracts in week two of free agency. So maybe they're saying, we're just going to be patient. We'll be able to get Wyatt Teller at our rate. And he's saying, no, someone will pay me more. And there's a little bit of that. And maybe they strike out. Then all of a sudden you hear the next day, oh, and Greg Van Roten's back 1 year, you know, $4.5 million. I think it'll be one of those two guys. It could be some of the other names you mentioned, but those are the two guys that have been most linked. And I just feel like if Van Roten goes and signs somewhere tomorrow, I get a little nervous because I do feel like he's the fallback plan. Not that that gets you excited, but he's a capable player. He's held the job down. He hasn't missed a snap in 2 years, which is remarkable. But if he's off the board, then I get a little nervous because there's your safety next. I do think they're probably waiting. He's probably waiting them out, and they're waiting out maybe what they perceive as better options. If they strike out, they kind of know they can go to him. And I think he's, you know, he's a local guy. We always talk about hometown discounts. He's probably one of the few guys who would, because to me, he's 35. He's from the area. I don't think he probably wants to move his family if he can help it. So I think that it probably ends up with either Teller or Van Roten.
All right. Last one before I let you go is Jeremiah Love. From what you know, from where the Giants are at, are they going in that direction?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still so knee deep in free agency. I haven't done a lot of, you know, I've seen some reporting on their interest. I honestly haven't even gotten there yet. So I can't sit there and say, yeah, sources tell me this, sources tell me that, because we got the next month to really dig into that. And I think, obviously there's preliminary reasons to believe there's interest. I certainly won't refute any of that. But I think these things pick up, you know, the pace. If we were talking this time last year, no one had Jackson Dart, you know, as a first round pick for them. I know it's different when you're talking about the fifth pick, but still. But yeah, I can't rule it out, because as much as Harbaugh, you know, we talked off the bat, supersizing this offense, wants to be a run first offense. He's the best running back in the draft, and people talk about him. I feel like we say every 2 to 3 years someone's generational, but people put him in that class of these Saquon and Bijan Robinson, all these guys. And I don't know if he's at that level, but if they view him as that, I could see it. I mean, listen, I'm not ready to have this argument again. I feel like we just did it, even though it was like 8 years ago, but using a top five pick on that position. Maybe the circumstances are different, but it's hard for me to see that being the best option for them with the holes they still do have. But I cannot rule it out, especially with, again, the Harbaugh, his whole DNA, his whole, want to be a physical team. If you think that this running back is the key to, he's going to be your Derrick Henry, like, he just enjoyed for a couple years in Baltimore. To me, it starts up front. And if you're skimping on guards, you're going to run it back with Greg Van Roten. I would much rather invest heavily in a guard than worry about using my, premium draft asset on a running back. But there's kind of different schools of thought on that. And I'm not mentally prepared to go down that road, because, man, that Saquon debate, which is like still going on, I feel like took years off my life.
I'm with you on that one. All right. Dan Duggan from The Athletic. Appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Some crimes are so shocking, they don't just make headlines, they forever change our society. I'm Katie Ring, host of America's Most Infamous Crimes. Each week, I take on one of the most notorious criminal cases. Each case unfolds across multiple episodes, released every Tuesday through Thursday, from the first sign that something was wrong to the moment the truth came out or didn't. Listen to and follow America's Most Infamous Crimes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.